Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I need to see a dentist. I can't go on court like this.
Hello, Renee.
Hello, Caitlin. We're back.
We're back.
Part deux.
Part deux. We had an incredible interview with Kim Clijsters. It was so long on the roof of the All England Lawn Tennis Center, Media Center, that we decided to chop the episode in two.
I mean, we have so much to talk about with her, and she had so much to tell us, and we just couldn't get enough, and we thought you guys could not have possibly had enough. She talks about everything, from her speech at the Australian Open to being the reason why she was called Aussie Kim.
Dressing a fan in a skirt.
Oh, that's right. Guess what? Which I was a part of.
You were on the court.
I'd had a PIMS on the court, that's why.
Spoiler alert, we might or might not have made a pact to get matching tattoos.
I'm doing it.
I'll do it.
She's doing it.
Let's do it. Here's part two. If you haven't heard part one, go back, listen to that first, then come back. Thank you for listening. Here's Kim Clijsters, part two.
What was it like living in the States for you? Did you like it?
I haven't officially lived in the States yet.
You haven't?
No.
I trained,
would, you know, we have a home in New Jersey, and
yeah.
Obviously my husband is American, and his family's all there.
Yeah.
They try to come and visit us. When they can. His brothers were just over, and his parents, you know, his mom helps a lot, like when I've had, you know, either
yeah.
Jade or Blake, like she's come over and stayed for a month, sometimes 2 months to help out, and so I've gotten a lot of help
yeah.
from her, but yeah, from my husband still, because he has his, you know, his basketball, so he doesn't get to go like home,
let's say.
For about 10 months out of the year, and so usually in the summer break we try to spend. You know,
I mean, if I were him, I would rather be in Belgium, I think, probably.
I mean, we like being in Belgium. We feel like after this, you know, when we come home or when we're about to leave or when we've been in America for 4 or 5 weeks and we're ready to go home again, back
yeah.
to Belgium, because I think we have our routine life.
Yeah.
You know, when we go to the States now, Jada wants to live in America because she thinks it's always sunny because we're always there in the summer.
Sure.
She has no school. She gets to like spend time with all her cousins
and her
stay up late. Yep, stay up late. Yep.
Sure.
And she does... You know, she does surf camp, she goes to, like, parties, and we have a lot of people and friends come
right.
over from Brian from college back when he was, you know, playing basketball, and they come visit us. So there's always something to do, and we're in Belgium, you know, everything is a little bit more strict and
mm-hmm.
organized, and
yeah.
And school, she has school. So it will be an adjustment if we ever decide to move.
Would you? Would you stay? Would you move?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind.
I mean,
I don't
give it
feel...
a while. It's not
yeah,
the best
no,
right
I
now.
Know. I know.
Yeah.
But I do feel like because we have that European base.
Yeah.
Of or our European lifestyle that I think I would always keep that even if I would live in America.
Yeah.
I mean, I think living in America is very convenient. Politics in America in Belgium aren't great either. There's
yeah.
in every country there's something or somebody that you're
right.
you know maybe disgusted by.
Sure.
But
well yeah, you guys had French and Flemish
yeah,
tensions.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
there's
forever.
Always something,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
that's not how it should be, but
right.
But we tried to, yeah, do what how we think it works for us.
That's
and,
great.
And that would be the same wherever we live.
Yeah, of course.
I've always said I would love to live in Australia.
Well, they've adopted you, practically.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
But even before
have
that,
they offered you
enjoyed.
Citizenship?
No, never. Never.
I'm sure they would if you ask.
I don't know.
Don't you think?
I don't know. Maybe
we'll get Renee to work on
yeah.
that. But New Jersey is a very different place.
I like it. I mean, there were Belgian tennis players, American tennis players like Marty Fish, and like they were like, oh, so where is your husband from? Or they remember him from when he was playing college
yeah.
basketball, and like yeah, New Jersey. They're like, oh man, like they felt like sorry for me. I was like, oh, like you know. where am I going to end up here?
Yeah, totally. Where is it?
It's in Belmar. It's at
it's on it's the beach.
On
yeah.
the beach. Like, we literally live like 100 meters from the beach.
That's
I don't
super
know.
Nice.
Yeah, close by. So, easy.
Nice.
Lifestyle.
That sounds actually pretty good.
It's very relaxed, and
totally.
And we still get to go to the city, and
yeah.
and when we feel like doing something, you know, more
yeah,
lively.
It's not like you live in Newark.
No,
oh,
not at
exactly.
all. It's the first, let's say, 40 minutes out of the airport are horrible,
and then
all
great.
Of a sudden there's like this green patch.
Yeah.
And then you're, it's
yeah.
a different world.
Yes.
I hurt my thumb. I was playing basketball with our daughter.
Oh, you play basketball?
I try.
Yeah.
I try. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I've always liked to do different things, even as workouts or when I was, you know, training for tennis. I always wanted a lot of variety in my workouts.
Yeah.
Canoeing, whatever we found. You know, I didn't enjoy like running for an hour.
Yeah.
I always tried to put, variety in it. And even now, like, we try to work out, like, we put in a little basketball in the backyard, and my husband and I, like, at night when the kids are asleep, we'll like.
One-on-one?
Shoot, yeah, one-on-one, or, like, he rebounds, and I have to try and make 50 shots, like, stuff like
that's
that,
cool.
like, yeah,
yeah,
like, little things, like, to just kind of get a little sweat in, I guess.
I also think there's nothing like playing a new sport and learning it
yeah.
to show you a little bit about who you are.
Because I sit on the sideline a lot, like, in basketball, I go to his games, I actually enjoy, like, driving up with him and watching a practice and kind of seeing... I enjoy like seeing the mental side of different sports and seeing how professional the guys are or you know like things like that. I really enjoy it and not to tell him or just more for myself to see the differences
mm-hmm.
and everything. And,
yeah, totally.
Yeah. So, but then I want to try it and I want to, I don't know, see you know how far is that 3-point line?
I bet you're pretty good.
Yeah, I'm okay. I mean, it's not nothing. It doesn't come natural. But
yeah, but if you...
I'm okay.
If you spend, I mean, is soccer the same or football the same?
Football, I feel more comfortable.
Well, of course.
Cause
and also
up,
the
yeah,
football,
yeah.
the footwork, I'm sure.
Yeah.
yeah.
I feel more comfortable because I've played. My dad, you know, I... Yeah.
Yeah.
I love football.
It.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's my passion is in football.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I rent this little apartment here.
Yeah.
So I had some people, like some Belgians. We had actually had a couple of Belgians that were still playing. And so we got some little snacks and so a few people. We were 7 of us, I think. But then all the emotions yesterday, because we were down 0-2 and then, you know, ended up winning in the last 30 seconds of the game. But it was, we were so, like, relieved and happy all of a sudden. And then we had adrenaline rush. And,
of course.
And then we went up to the Dog and Fox, which is, like, a popular pub up here.
Yes.
Hardly ever do they play the national anthem in Belgium.
Huh.
But there they did. And some of the little kids were dressed up and Brian, my husband, is there and they, you know, started playing the national anthem and he was like, is nobody getting up? Like everybody stayed in their seat and listened.
Mm-hmm.
Like was quiet, but it like in America there's a different vibe, you know,
yeah.
a different yeah. Like I get goosebumps when I hear the American.
Do you?
Yeah.
Because
or
you
in the,
know,
I mean, especially also when I've been at the U.S. Open and also they play the American, the national anthem, I get goosebumps like
mm-hmm.
before my match. I'm like, ooh, like it's
because
you feel how important it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in Belgium, we don't have it.
That's
like
I can't tell if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Especially at the U.S. Open where you feel like the stadium. I mean, let's say like
well,
when
you won a fuck ton of U.S. Opens.
Yeah, but it's the loudest Grand Slam too. Like it's hard to quiet a New York crowd at the U.S. Open, and then all of a sudden it goes from like always like a buzz and like
mm-hmm.
you know you
background
always
chatter.
Hear like whatever potato chips something glasses clinging like there's always noise.
Yeah,
but then when you yeah the national anthem and everybody gets up and looks you know at the flag and it's a different it's very. I don't know, like the energy changes within a second.
It must be on the court at Arthur Ashe Stadium.
Yeah.
Very unique as a player
yeah.
to hear silence.
Yeah, and it's, you know, usually like before a final, like it was at night as well. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so the whole moment is yeah, it's a...
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is cool, yeah.
Is the Olympics like that?
Different. I mean, for me as a Belgian, I mean, I enjoyed playing the Olympics, but again, you don't have that same
yeah
I don't know.
Feeling of patriotism.
Yeah.
Like unity.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think that's a Belgian thing? Or is that
I
just,
think so.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a Belgian thing.
Yeah.
I think we're very, I'm not saying individual, but like also like with our feet on the ground, kind of,
yeah.
like clear minded, like we don't.
You don't get swept up in emotional.
No, not a lot
like
that. No,
yeah.
No.
Well, that was what was so always so interesting to me about Justine. Because in America, a lot of us sort of like thought of her as French, just because obviously she's French speaking and she's from the French part of the country. And you have been adopted, and it's partly maybe because you married an American, but you've been adopted by these English speaking countries.
Because
you feel maybe more like us.
Yeah, I do. And I remember when I was a little girl, or, you know, when I was 11, 12, 13 years old, going to the States for the first time. To me, it was like literally a dream come true. Like whatever, like watching TV shows to music to the convenience of going to, you know, I come from a small town in Brie, and a small city and a small town near that city.
Yeah.
And I admired, you know, I watched tennis on TV, I saw shows, and but then when I was actually in the States and I was able to experience it, you know, without my parents, it was like my own adventure, you
cool.
know. And yeah, it was really cool, and I enjoyed, you know, we don't have morning TV shows or you know, yeah, late night show, whatever.
I think if I may be so bold, I think you're an extrovert, and you felt you feel energized by that, by the expansiveness, by the big possibilities. Is that
I
fair?
Thought, yeah.
Is that a good statement?
Maybe. But I also enjoyed. What I loved seeing was how open people were able to talk about whatever.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like I
loved it.
Yeah.
I loved seeing people.
There wasn't
like,
a
in
barrier.
Belgium,
There's
it's
not
a... very... We're a very sarcastic... Very sarcastic crowd.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, like a, our humor is
so
sarcasm.
Can
and
you always tell what somebody means what they say or says what they mean? Or is it always sort of questionable?
I mean... You know,
I'm sure you can tell.
Yeah, there's people who, you know, I have friends who, you know, I know there who are, have a very sarcastic sense of humor.
Sure.
But it's always, yeah, I don't know, it's a different type of, it's different than the States. I'm to me, not one is better than the others, but I feel more, I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
For me, like, when I go running in the States in the morning,
yeah.
when the sun comes up, it can be 6 a.m., whatever, 5:30. I go running. Out of the, let's say, 30 people you cross, 25 of them will say good morning, which in the States is like a normal thing.
Mm-hmm.
That really surprised me in the beginning. Because in Belgium, it's not like that. It's more to their own. Like,
mm-hmm.
like
yeah.
they don't like the... Yeah, like...
Yeah.
I don't know, to go into somebody else's space
right.
or, you know, and it's not on purpose. It's not like they're trying to be mean.
No.
It's just different. And
well, the Australians are very much the same way, no?
Yeah.
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 So you find more common ground.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like, because I like to, by just a simple little hello or whatever, you know, can it makes somebody, can give you a little spark.
It gives you energy.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like, and maybe that's what, is that what it feels like when you're at the academy? Like when you're around all these other people, they're playing, you know, was that a natural thing for you to do?
I wanted to give back.
Yeah.
I wanted to give back from sports where I, you know, that has given me so much.
Your family so much. I mean,
yeah.
this has been the definition
yeah.
of your
but
life.
But it's also, it can also be draining.
I'm sure.
Because it's also a business in a way, and people, which I'm not good at, but people always... It's you only hear a lot of times you only hear the complaints,
mm-hmm.
you know, when this person or this like
or they want something for me,
yeah.
they want something, for
yeah.
me.
So
it's transactional,
it's you have to find a good balance between. And I have, you know, my coach who was my longest coach, Carl, he's the director of my academy, so
mm-hmm.
he's kind of the filter, you know, he gets everything and then we talk and have meetings and he filters kind of what I need to know and not. And
but do you get energy from it? Like, are you sort of... Like, is it something in your
I
life
do.
That you feel like...
I
oh,
do.
Okay,
there's, I mean, there's moments where it drains energy.
Of course.
As well. But overall, it yeah, I get energy from it.
Yeah.
Aussie Kim, how did that come about? A. B, tell people that didn't see the speech and Did you ever think about that before you actually...
No, I don't think about my speech at all, because it beds bad luck. No, I'm just saying, it's my superstitiousness. I don't think... anyway, I was named Aussie Kim because my first boyfriend was an Australian tennis player they played to do with. And
hey, well, hold on a second, time out. Not only was it her first boyfriend, but she was engaged to him. And second of all, I still have somewhere in the archives of my world... an invitation to the wedding.
I know.
And it was from Kim, not from Leighton, which is even funnier.
Yes.
Yeah, it's somewhere.
Belgian invited you to your wedding, not the
Aussie? The Belgian invited me, not the Aussie.
In Adelaide.
Yeah, in Adelaide.
You really married in Adelaide?
Yeah. Wow. So anyway, that didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen.
But?
Even when I was with Leighton, I always felt, you know, I traveled to a lot of the Davis Cup ties, and I would sit with the fanatics, and I would know them, and I love that...
energy,
that people know that, yeah, the openness, you know, the that lifestyle, the culture, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, so years went on, and I didn't get married to him, but then I would still, when I would go back to the Australian Open, people would still call me Aussie Kim
in the paper. Was Aussie Kim,
like,
wins.
In interviews, like, and people on the street, like, ah, oh, good day, Aussie Kim, like, they would kind of, I'm like, hi. Anyway, there's actually still people nowadays that ask Brian, oh yeah, where are you from in Australia? I'm like, no, that was the one before.
That was a shorter one. That was a shorter guy.
Yeah, so he's like, oh, here we go.
Anyway.
So then...
Well, I asked her earlier if Australia had offered her citizenship.
I would have given it to her.
That's what I said.
I tried to recruit her for Fed Cup, but she, you know, she wouldn't give her Belgium to... Anyway, so go on. So you win so you feel the pressure in Australia a little bit? Did you feel a little bit of the pressure to win there?
If I wanted to win another... I felt pressure to win another Grand Slam besides my US Opens.
Yeah.
Your first, when you win your first one, you're so happy and you feel like,
sure.
Oh, a relief.
Yeah.
But then you're like, I need to win another one because I don't want to be the person that has only won one Grand Slam. No, seriously.
Oh, and think about all the people that never won one. Poor
no,
them.
But that's how
yeah,
you
I
keep,
know.
Like...
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I know.
You don't want it to seem like a fluke.
The Australian Open was one where... Of course, you know, if you can win Wimbledon, that's also great, you know, but the Australian Open, to me, for my game, I felt like I was more comfortable on another hard court, which was, you know, in Melbourne, and so, yeah, I got closer to the...
And you felt the love of the people, I think.
I felt the love. I mean,
everyone
not even on
wanted
court,
you to win.
Like, outside, even, you know, and then I won, and I actually chipped my tooth really badly. Just before...
I remember this.
The night before my...
Doing
or the day before
what?
My... When I played, I was a little bit, like, autistic, like, with my... And
let's say OCD.
Yeah, maybe.
Little.
I had, you know, these
you're like
habits
Rafa.
And... Yeah. I had habits that only I did, you know. And I always traveled with this... It's like a pen from metal, and it, don't laugh.
I'm not. I am.
Yeah.
But it revives or... produces the energy in the water. So I always swirl.
Oh. Okay.
Like 10 things. So I would do that in bottled water. Like, but then it fell in, the pen fell in the water.
Oh, no.
So I'm trying to get it out by drink. I can't reach it with my fingers. So I try to, like, drink it, and the metal pen, like, slips out, and it hits my tooth, and it chips my whole front tooth.
This is the night before the
day
final?
Before the final. Before the
tournament
starts.
Yeah, I thought it was before the
tournament. I'm like, I'm called the physios from the WTA. I'm like, I need to see a dentist. I can't go on court like this.
Was it obvious?
Like, like Dumb and Dumber, you know, the scene in Dumb and Dumber? I'm like, I can't go on court like this. So I get this guy who was a fan, and he's like, yeah, you know, more than happy to help. So
wait,
dentist?
Yeah. Well, he's a dentist who happens to be a fan.
Yeah, he's like,
yeah, but a fan
yeah,
dentist.
He's like, I would love to, you know, fix your tooth.
Was he, like,
and
getting autographs, and he was like, by the way,
yeah,
I'm
we
a
had some pictures, and,
okay.
And no, I called... Like, the WTA called him, and you know...
It wasn't
maybe,
like
maybe he was trying to be nice and saying that he was a fan, but he helped out.
You get your
tooth fixed. Get my tooth fixed, happy. You know, I win the next day and get to the final. And the thing was, I actually told him that I'll say something about you if I win, you know? Or he's mentioned something like
that was his payment.
Just give me a shout-out. Like, he didn't want me to pay him, and he said, just give me a shout-out when you win. I'm like, deal. Of course, like, if
yeah.
I win, great, I'll
yeah.
say whatever you want to hear. So,
other than, yes, I'll marry you.
Yeah, right.
Although, who knows?
So, yeah. So, when I was standing there and I get the microphone handed over to me, I'm thinking, oh my God, I have to thank the dentist. And actually, I forgot his last name.
Yeah, I know.
Like, so I said, that's the first, I wanted to get it over and done with, because, I mean, it must have sound like pretty ridiculous, you know.
I'm sure it sounded amazing.
No, it's great. Anyway, her speech
so
was
I
great.
Did that. And, yeah. And well, then at and the then end, I was like, okay, now I feel like, you know, I told him, I said, now I really feel like you guys can call me Aussie Kim. Because, you know, I was holding the trophy. And
the Daphne Akhurst
yeah.
Cup. It was and a beautiful story.
I
it was
remember
a great
that
speech.
Part. We will find the speech and I will put it in the audio, if that's okay. Because
yeah,
now you've
care.
Shouted out this dentist.
It was a great speech. Thankfully, you know, and you beat Lena, who, of course, ended up being sort of like the next heir apparent to the
yeah.
Australian public wanting to win. Because
they
I really feel
too.
Like,
yeah.
you know, the Australian public in particular, well, I think everywhere, but Australia really gravitates to people that have that personality that's fun and
yeah.
easygoing. And Lena, obviously, we all know, had those post-match interviews of giving Dennis her husband hell, and so they sort of once you had won, then there's like then she ended up winning a couple of years later, and everyone really pushed her to win. But when Kim won, there was a lot of very happy people, and I was courtside for the match for Channel 7. And Kim,
I remember watching, looking at you sometimes,
yeah,
like when you were sitting right in front of me.
Literally,
during
I was
the match,
I'm
during
court,
the match,
during
like
the
I see her, you know, doing her thing.
I'm courtside,
and I look at her like, and she's like.
Did you feel like she was sending
yeah,
you good
I felt
vibes?
The, yeah.
yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be biased, obviously, because
no.
I'm friends with everyone, but Kim and I go back a long way,
yeah,
and
yeah.
so there were times that she would, I mean, literally, we are exactly across from each
yeah.
other on the court,
just,
and there were times that she would look at me, and I'd sort of just look at her like, almost like her mum, like, you're okay, you're doing fine,
yeah.
keep going, keep
mm-hmm,
going,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, any player, I've done it with a lot of players,
yeah,
because
yeah, yeah.
literally where my seat is directly opposite. And I remember that night, and I remember thinking when she won, and I got to interview her after the match, the first person
yep.
to interview her, and yeah, they're great moments that you share with really, we're a traveling circus, and Kim is definitely one of those people you love to see win.
Well, I was telling her, I feel like that's why so many countries have adopted her, because Americans consider her one of our own. And
well,
maybe
it's different in America than
in
Australia. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Well, I think we just took such a love to Kim immediately, and vice versa, her.
Yeah.
With
I
us.
Also think I talked about the sarcasm, that humor that
yeah.
Australians have that too.
Yeah.
You know.
So it's like similar.
Americans don't have the same humor as Australians.
No, not at all.
Because you
all.
Can literally say, I went to an event recently, and I walked by a girl, and it was outside. I've told you this story,
yeah.
Kate. And it was sunny, and it was beautiful, and I was with my Aussie friend. Joe, and I said, oh, really, you know, average day today, right? Meaning, it's an amazing day,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Right? And she goes, well, actually, it's not bad. And I was like, oh my God, she did not get my humor. There's
no...
No, they,
that's...
Kim would get it. If I said, oh, it's an
yeah,
average day today,
yeah.
she'd go, yeah, really crap, isn't it? But, you know, it's a different...
Americans don't take the piss.
That's right.
And you guys
can't
we
handle
take,
it.
We can't handle the piss.
That's the thing.
Well,
can't
handle the piss. Well, the
yeah.
alcohol's a different story.
No,
that's the thing with my husband and I. Like, I tease him so much, like all the time, all the time.
Get...
And he's like,
"Are you serious?
Yeah, are you serious?" I'm like, "Don't get all sensitive on me now. Like, I'm only joking."
What are the kids? Which kids have your personality and his personality?
Jada is my personality. Wants to tease and all the time, like
drops
yeah.
from your tree.
Jack is sensitive. Sensitive. We'll mm-hmm. we'll have the big like elephant tears if I even make him like want to tease him a little
yeah.
bit. It's like it starts and the lip goes down and I'm like, oh, it's okay. Like our mommy's only joking, you know. But I'm like, toughen up. Like, I'm like, come on, toughen up.
What sports are they gonna play?
Jada basketball for sure.
Did you tell me that we're supposed to play Ladies Invitational here at Wimbledon, and you've just told me you have a thumb injury
yes.
due to playing basketball.
But I think it's getting better.
We talked about
don't expect me to take on any ground strokes over you.
What side would you like to play on, forehand or backhand?
Well, clearly, Kim, I know your backhand is like as good as any backhand we've ever seen in the history of the game, but I'm pretty sure that your forehand is 50 billion times better than my forehand, so I think it's best I play the backhand side.
Okay.
Because I know that I can still hit a late forehand, but to hit an early forehand might be a little difficult for me. So let me play in the backhand.
Really?
Okay,
fine.
You know what? Whenever you
we'll
want to
figure
no,
that.
Whenever you want to play on, you
we'll
play on.
We'll figure it out. The only thing, I just have to see with my thumb if I can hit a proper forehand.
Well, I have to figure out if my neck. I mean,
wait,
we're just
a
disaster.
Let me ask you a question, because I
know Lee Na's actually playing Legends.
I can't
yes.
wait.
Does that seem wrong, because she's so recently retired?
I walked over to this...
Wait a second, you have to... Wait a second. You just asked if Lena is... It's okay for her to play. Martina Hingis was playing when she was like 27 in the Ladies Invitational, and then came back like 2 years later and won Wimbledon doubles again. So there's no criteria really here at all.
No, everybody's really good. I watched the shit out of the Ladies Legends at the French Open. I watched Navratilova play with Marion Bartoli. Marion Bartoli was hitting like 150 mile an hour two-handed forehands at Arantxa Sanchez in the face. It was intense.
Yeah. Well, we played him the day before.
And?
Some are a little more intense than others.
It was watching the Navratilova Bartoli.
Sometimes it's hard. I find it hard in Legends to find, like, you have to find a balance between...
Fun?
Yeah, fun, because there's a different generation, too, of players who don't hit hard at all. You know, I still feel like if I, you know, kind of put my body weight into the ball, I can create some, like, pace, you know? You have to find a balance there, and...
Kim can hit a 100-mile-an-hour winner at any time, anywhere, any place she wants. But what's the point? You want to have a bit of fun. Although it does get a little bit too competitive. I could also come in and hit a volley at someone's face if I really wanted
to. Yeah, but you don't
but
want
I
to.
Don't really
no,
want
that's
to
the
do
thing.
That.
But I also don't have, I think, that natural talent of kind of, you know...
Really?
Goof around and like make it look like, oh, we're playing like the men do, you know? They do these tricks and...
Which is why she leaves that to me. Because that's all I've got now. This tweeners.
Exactly. So I do have to...
No, look.
Like, if I look like I'm not putting the effort in or don't move, like, let my arm go through, swing it through the ball, then I actually don't... I don't know.
Did you guys request each other? How do you get paired up?
No, we don't request each other. I mean, why would I
she
request
She used to request
Kim?
Playing with me when we were on tour.
I wish we'd played together one time.
Yeah,
it would have been so good, because we would have been great together. Although, you know, I can honestly say that I never lost to Kim.
That's true.
Because you never played her.
But
she
I never
was so
played...
annoying to play against.
I've also never lost to Kim.
I never ever lost to Kim, but I never played her in singles.
True, but in doubles.
She hated playing me in doubles, but I loved playing Kim.
We had good...
Fun together.
Yeah.
We had fun matches against one another.
Yeah.
Actually,
I didn't hate playing against you. It's like just... It was hard, you know? She was good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks. I played Kim, actually, in my very first Wimbledon final here that I won. It was against Kim, but she was a baby. She was, what were you, 17, 18?
17.
Who were you playing with?
Sugiyama.
Yeah, so Sugiyama and Kim, and it was me and Lisa Raymond. And, yeah, so Kim was a baby then. Yeah.
Do you
I played against Kim
I
and
do.
Leighton in mixed.
Mixed doubles.
And
you and Leighton
was
played
Was that
together?
Here?
French Open.
Ah, French Open. That was our first mixed doubles that we played
Me
together.
And Todd, I believe, played you and Leighton. Or was it... Daniel Nesta, I don't remember. I
My first mixed doubles match, I had no idea what to expect. So Leighton and I were like, you know, we're in love, and we wanted to play mixed doubles together. And the first game, he tries to lob, I think it was a Danish guy, or I don't remember who it was, or some Scandinavian player.
Some dude that was big.
Yeah, and he lobs, but he lobs too short, and the guy smashes straight at me, like it hits my stomach, like straight, full out, like.
What?
And I'm like, ugh. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like,
done.
So I guess the guys go, because I was wondering, like, do the guys, you know, go full out? And so that was my answer right there.
You got pegged in the stomach
immediately
with a shitty lob by your boyfriend.
No, yeah.
And that was the end of the relationship.
No, that was just the start.
But was it weird playing with somebody you were in love with?
No, it was fun.
It was fun?
It was so much fun.
I think it's weird that you guys could play together, too.
No, not me. No. I didn't play with Kim. We weren't in love. I love her, but we're not
I love you,
No,
too.
But you both have played with your significant others on
yes.
the professional tennis court.
I thought it was fun.
Did you ever...
I always laughed.
Did
I
you
was...
enjoy, like, looking down the other end thinking that Lisa and I would be fighting or something?
I mean, there were times where I was like, oh, poor Lisa.
Rude.
That's our promo cut right there.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If there was one match, Kim Clijsters, that you could take back and play again, which one?
Zvonareva, 2011 quarterfinal, I think, here at Wimbledon. Yep. I was upset and just kind of lost my... And I felt... I'm not good at remembering draws and stuff like that, but I think Pironkova would be the next...
Pironkova, yeah.
I think she beat Venus or something in the quarters, and that was obviously the match before our match, and so it was kind of like playing Pironkova in the semi-final at Wimbledon, and you know, it was like a good draw,
I guess,
and to Zvonareva, I just kind of stopped playing, you know. So that's a match that I wished a few times already that I could play that over again.
Because theoretically, you would have been in the finals, which you've never played.
Maybe you still have to play him, but there was a big chance at Wimbledon. I've lost my semifinals here. I think to Venus and to Lindsay, my two semifinals. So they were
too good.
Yeah, too good. Yeah. They played too good. I mean,
I mean, Venus and Lindsay are two of the greatest Wimbledon
players on grass.
Yeah.
So that's the one that you would want to take back.
That's the one where I feel like. And the other ones, I mean, I've lost Grand Slam finals, you know, the one against Jennifer Capriati at the French Open. But
8-6 in the third.
But I was too young to win. Yeah. Without a doubt, I was too young to win and to kind of be ready for that.
When you say you were too young to win, what does that mean? Like, where is your mind when you're 10 years older than how old?
Yeah, why is that different for you and not for Hingis or Serena or Steffi?
Because of the impact of how your life changes. It already changed big time, but I wasn't ready to take on that pressure yet.
Is that what changed when you had a kid? Because your perspective changed?
I was able to just focus on tennis when and not all the other stuff. The other stuff wasn't important anymore. You know, when I was younger, I felt overwhelmed.
By the
The attention, still, I still do, but I was overwhelmed by the
money, expectations,
the expectations. That's not why I didn't sign up for that.
You signed up to have fun and play a sport,
and to play tennis and to go all out and to work. You know that, like, my passion is still. I still feel as much passion for tennis as I did when I was younger. If I can go, if we go play. It's my playground. Like, it's my tennis was my psychologist. It was my fun. It was my, like, still passion, you know.
It changed when you felt like Grand Slam is going to change my. It's going to change my joy to being a job, work, expectation. Is that why?
Yeah, because all the other stuff that gets added onto your schedule, that has nothing to do with tennis anymore. I wasn't ready for. It's not like I was not for the tennis part of it, but it was. All the other stuff, the responsibilities, the attention,
appearances,
like all that stuff. Like I.
So do you understand when somebody wins one Grand Slam and then struggles for a year or two, like we've seen?
Yeah.
You understand why?
Of course.
And how difficult is it?
Because it's a process. I honestly, as painful as it was to lose my Grand Slam finals, the one against Jennifer wasn't as painful because it was... still a great result. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a young girl. Mm-hmm. I played some of my best tennis, and it was huge.
And Jennifer was a superstar.
Yeah. But then my next match is when I lost to Justine in the three next finals.
Mm-hmm. Devastating.
Devastating. They hurt. But what hurt the most was that I was overwhelmed already before the match. I didn't know how to handle the situation. Playing another Belgian, playing in a Grand Slam final. It's all those little things together, because I played Justine many times before, mm-hmm. you know, and beaten her in third semifinals of the French Open, which was also a big occasion, but mm-hmm. I was still capable of playing some of my best tennis, just not in the match. Like, the thought of winning a Grand Slam to me was too overwhelming, because it was like, as a little girl,
You don't realize winning a slam is one thing, but everything that comes along with it, you are not taught how to deal with.
Yeah.
Do you talk to any players that you know on the tour the last couple of years that have had that expectation? Have they ever asked you, how did you handle this, Kim?
I've had a few players, actually, who...
Can you say been, who, or are you...
Yeah, no, like, no, that's fine. I mean, Simona Halep, mm-hmm. you know, situation. Caroline Wozniacki, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. How to handle after or before those
both.
Conversations? So you've had conversations with Wozniacki and Halep about how to win a slam and then how to deal with it after it?
More afterwards, I think, you know, when Simona lost the French Open last year, you know, so when you get so close and you see the reason why they lost, although she was the much better player, mm-hmm. you know, she just kind of froze and her arm got tight and I could relate to that so clearly. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, you have to try and just stick to what you're doing because everything that you're doing is working well. You know, you're mm-hmm. getting to the finals, she was number one in the world, she's fit, she can do anything she wants, but you just have to try and get yourself in that position again because you can't practice on that moment.
Yeah.
You know, you can't practice for that, so you have to try and get yourself into a position again where you're capable of doing a couple of things different.
Having a chance. I remember because I talked to you about this with Karolina Pliskova in Singapore.
Yeah.
And I said, I grabbed Kim. I literally grabbed Kim and I said, Kim, tell Karolina something, you know? And she said... That is exact words.
Yeah.
She said, you know what? Sometimes you just have to keep putting yourself in that situation. Mm-hmm. And Halep is a perfect example, as is Wozniacki, as was you.
I mean, it's rare, you know, what happened to Ostapenko last year at the French Open.
That's not normal.
No, not normal, but it's rare that you win your first Grand Slam. And I had people tell me, like, oh, I took even Lendl 5,
yeah.
I think.
Well, look
you know?
At Andy Murray, same thing.
Yeah, so... It happens, and I really believe that if I, just within myself, if I look at the process that I made as a tennis player, but also as a human being, it had to happen like this, and I wouldn't change it for anything. Like, it had to happen, I had to lose those matches for me to win in 05, in 09, like it's, because they all helped to get you to that point, yes, they all helped.
When you say that you had conversations with, you know, obviously Pliskova, that's because Renee thrust her at you and said, Kim said you're really smart. Wozniacki,
no, but we talk about it sometimes.
Yeah,
you could see that her, you know, body language got a little bit down or nervous.
Well,
or
my thing
hesitant.
Is, why wouldn't you talk?
Of course.
Mm. Well, and this is why, I believe, and I said this on the podcast with Todd, you will see, hopefully, more women start to bring the Kim Kleisters, the Justine Annan, who, you know, Svitolina brought in last
mm-hmm.
couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Look at Muguruza with Conchita last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's nobody that can
Maresma.
Substitute
yeah.
Maresma. There's no one that you can substitute with somebody who's been there
yeah.
and done it and knows
and
what
a female.
Feels. And
yeah.
a female.
Because so
they are different.
And a female. Like,
yeah.
We aren't, like, yeah.
There's not enough of us.
There's not a lot of female coaches.
No.
Even in our
in
academy.
Any
I try,
level.
You know, I... But I
Why?
Get, because the family life becomes so, yeah, there's a tough juggling. And tennis too, like you have to, if you want to become a coach, you have to travel, you have to be away a little bit. And I mean, even for me, I've had great offers from players, you know, who wanted to work and who thought that maybe I had, you know, could have a positive impact or change something in their career. And but you have to be able to travel a certain amount of weeks and especially with me, you know, with the last two, you know, kids, I couldn't do that
yeah.
yet. And although there's a part of me that really wanted to do it and take on that challenge, because I love the challenge of, yeah, being able to help somebody to try and achieve a goal. And
are they absorbing it? Do they
take
it?
They do. I really think they do.
They think,
yeah,
this is a human being who's
yeah,
done
because
this.
I don't, I really talk out of my experience because I really felt, to me it was very clear
mm-hmm.
how it
yeah.
happened. And so if I just explain how it went for me, then it's up to them what they do with it. But
of
I
course.
Think some there's some parts that will stick, you know, into their
well,
into
also,
their head that when they get to a certain situation they and Simona told me after the match at the French, she was like, I actually thought about you. I didn't want to go fourth, you know, four matches
like you.
Yeah, yeah.
You loser.
Like, thanks. So
oh,
there's
nice.
Little things like
yeah.
yeah
but that's really nice.
Yeah, but it's great, you
yeah.
know, and because in our sport too, like it's so individual.
Yeah.
You know, and players don't really want to give anything away and they're not
while
I'm not
they're
saying
still
jealous.
Playing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. while they're still playing and jealous, and I felt like I had moments. I mean, with you, like, we were playing, but you would help and give advice, and, you know, like, all the time there was stuff like that, and that's what I liked. Like, there's players who were really open to do that, and then you have the other ones who don't trust anybody, who don't want to take or think you're lying, you know, like, there's always the different personalities, but... Yeah.
I corner her and tell her, listen. No, yeah. I'm just kidding.
No, but, I mean, I've been coached by Renee. She can't help herself. She's like, your backhand, no, da-da-da-da.
Yeah, but I think... Passion.
I think it's about passion, and I think what I was trying to say earlier by complimenting you as an athletic player or joyous player is you're playing for the sport of it. And if you're playing for the real sport of it because you want the best possible tennis to be happening, then you can be generous.
I can honestly say
you can be
that
generous
I've
with
never
somebody.
Played for money.
Yeah, I believe you.
I've never played for money.
You can tell by watching
if it. If I even felt like the pressure of, oh, if I win this match, I can become number
one. Well, hold
one.
On, hold on, hold on. Because I remember having a conversation with you at the Australian Open a couple of years ago when you played your last one, I think it was, and you said... Oh, Stubbsy, mate, I've got to make the quarters just to break even with the group that I've got with me.
That was because I was playing with a lot of, traveling with a lot of people. But it was never
different.
My fire, you know? Yeah. Like, but a lot of players don't have the choice to play for money because it's their income. Like, they have to juggle and make the pieces of the puzzle fall into place. Like, that, if it had to get to that, I don't know if I could do it. To me, I still feel like when I go practice now, it feels the same as when I was 8 years old practicing and going all out and running for a ball that's 2 meters out and trying to get to it. Like, I still do that. My body can't handle it now. I'll have injuries. But that's how
true.
My mind is. If I,
by the way,
now I don't warm up, I will still hit my first smash as hard as I can.
Yeah, Steffi's the same. Steffi was your idol.
Yeah, she was. Is.
Yeah.
I mean, poster on your wall?
I used to, yeah.
Me too?
Yeah.
Not anymore. She's taken
and
it
I
down.
And I had Pat Rafter.
Oh, well, there you go. Why didn't you become a serving volleyer then? You
remember
the Steffi
rap? I tried to serve like him a lot of times
in
my, you know, when I practiced and we were playing around. And
we are at Wimbledon. One of the most watched videos of all time at Wimbledon has been the fact that Kim Clijsters brought someone down from the public. That Chris Quinn was his name. He was a bit large at the time. He's now lost weight.
He has.
He's working out. He looks awesome. Mm-hmm. But Kim brought him down onto the court and put a white skirt on him and my white top on him and served to him. And if you haven't seen it on YouTube, just YouTube Kim Clijsters man in skirt.
Yeah. Did he return your serve?
And the joke was that the crowd kept telling Kim where to serve and hit an ace. And she's so bloody good still. She literally hit two aces. And then
They would tell me, oh, hit an ace. First it started, hit an ace. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. And I hit an ace. I was like, lucky me.
Didn't know I
like,
could do that.
This worked out perfect. So then I look at the person again, and I'm like, where shall I serve? And he was like, what? And I said, where shall I serve? And then all of a sudden, this one guy yells out, just serve to her body. And I'm like,
and Conchita Martinez looks like,
what does that mean? Like, what do you mean with
impossible
that?
Impossible like, to serve an ace to the body. It's going to hit me.
It's going
to
hit you. No.
So I was like, excuse me, like to your body, let me serve to your body.
Yeah.
Like this, because there was a bigger target. And I was like, come on, you know, and I was like, and I just went along and I don't know. And then I realized I'm standing there and I see that he's in like a blue shorts, like against every Wimbledon rule, you know, and I'm like, oh, and I usually have like a spare
skirt
or whatever. Yeah.
She's the only legend that actually brings extra clothes, but anyway.
I can't say I'm the only mother. Maybe there's some problems happening on court or something.
Okay, we'll leave that alone.
Anyway.
So she runs to a bag.
So I run to my bag and I have this skirt. And I go over to him and try to put it on him. And I couldn't get it over his knees.
No, you said it was like putting it on, you know, my five-year-old. I just, wrinkled it up, put it over his ankles and thought that's going to be it. But God love him, he pulled it all the way up.
Yeah, I couldn't get it over it unless I was like ripping it. But he did. Ripped it and
put my shirt on, which was even smaller.
Yeah,
so he looked like a stuffed sausage.
He did look like
stuffed
sausage, and he got the serve back in the court, and it was hilarious. And Kim was in tears serving to this guy.
Oh my God.
And it was on Jimmy Kimmel. It was on SportsCenter, and ESPN in the States. It went everywhere, went viral. So if you haven't seen it, everybody out there, you've got to look at it. And the greatest line from the commentator who was doing the match says, yes, that's a man in a skirt trying to return Kim Clijsters' serve at Wimbledon. Drunkest you ever got after winning?
Yep. You know the answer.
Come on.
Why are you asking
me?
Was
it with Stoughton?
Come on.
Yeah. It was after my last US Open.
No,
my 2010 win. You were working for the Tennis Channel? ESPN?
Yep.
What was it?
I was working for Tennis Channel at the time.
Tennis Channel, you were working.
Yeah.
And it was my last...
Match? Last Grand Slam. US Open.
But I won.
No, well, you came
or did
up.
Did I retire?
You'd retired. That was your
so
last
match.
So
I lost
match.
Actually in the second round.
Yeah. No, you lost in mixed doubles.
Yeah.
I believe.
No. It was after I won.
What we're trying to say is that Kim got drunk a lot.
That's not true at all. That's why after I was drunk, because it was after two or three glasses of champagne in your TV compound booth, wherever we were. So they're feet and they're like, cheers. And I'm like, yes. And I was happy. I think it was after my win, 2010.
I think it was that time in particular. Let me tell
anyway.
The story here, because you were obviously too drunk. Yeah. That wasn't the drunkest after a win. That was after you retired. It was Tracy Austin and me, and I think it might have been Brett Haber from Tennis Channel.
Yes, it was.
And we kept supplying you with champagne, and you kept drinking it, but you hadn't eaten.
Oh, boy.
And so you got very drunk. But after you won a slam, do you remember any of those?
No. I never... That's a weird thing about a Grand Slam.
You're tired.
As a kid, I... pictured or try to put my or visualized how awesome it felt to win a Grand Slam, and it's the happiest moment for me when you win is actually when you're able to go see your coach, your team, your family, your people who are there with you, because those are the people who helped you get to that point. Like you trained the hardest, you had, you know, whatever tough situations you went through it, and you're happy when you win, but that's like that lasts a minute, two minutes maybe, you know, you're still proud, but then that first feeling is kind of gone. But then when you're able to go to your box and see your family and everybody, that's when it becomes the most emotional. And then once that's over with, you start doing media, and then, you know, you go to your hotel room and you sit there. And my first US Open, I remember I was by myself in my hotel room. Brian was in Belgium and my dad was in Belgium, and I sat in my hotel room, and we were leaving the next day. We were flying back to Belgium. So I'm sitting on the floor. I'm a mess. My room is a mess. I'm not very organized. So I have like all my clothes there, and I'm like my dirty laundry bag, and I'm like trying to like figure out how am I going to pack, you know? And I'm literally sitting in between all these piles of clothes, and I'm
Grand
trying
Slam
to,
champion.
Yes.
What do I pack
and
first?
Literally, that's how I think. I said, look at me. That's what I'm thinking. I lean back and I'm like, look at me. This is it. Like, and then
this
I want,
is
this it? Yeah, exactly. That's how I thought. And I was like, and then you get so tired.
Yeah.
And then you're tired and you just hit the wall.
Yeah. Can I tell you a little added story to that? It's nothing like winning singles, but when I won my first Australian Open in the doubles and the mix, they give you the trophy. Now they'll send it to you, right? Well, maybe they don't for the doubles. But they literally give you the trophy. And you remember the Bali bags, you know, the mesh bags that are like, oh, you're overweight, you've got to put your bags in. Well, they gave me a couple of those for my trophies, right? So here I am by myself, drive to Lisa had already gone to Japan to play the next tournament, right? So I was there by myself. Go to the airport with all my shit, okay, all my bags, and I've got my two trophies in the mesh bags from Bali, okay, with my rackets. And I go into the airport, I sit down, I'm starving, I get a Big Mac from McDonald's. No, excuse me, I was at Burger King. Sitting at Burger King at the airport, flying to Tokyo for the next tournament, because we don't have any time to celebrate.
No.
And I'm sitting there by myself in Melbourne Airport,
isn't it,
having a Burger King
yeah.
with my two trophies next to me, going,
Is this it? Yeah.
Okay, well let me say something as the only person in this room who's never won a Grand Slam and never will, that I am so happy for both of you guys, truly, that you have what's way more important, which is that you didn't play for money, you didn't play for fame, you didn't play for trophies, you played because you fucking love it, because this lunatic lives three blocks away from me, and I'm so much worse than she is, even though I'm decent, And she still wants to play with me. Come on, hey, come on, let's go play in the
passion.
Morning.
That's the only thing.
She begs to my house.
Honestly.
She drags me to the court. You're playing, it's your playground. It's fucking awesome. It's
I don't
really
play
awesome.
For it. Yeah, it's.
And you'll always
I
have
love
that.
It.
And you're always
because
gonna have that.
Because of the moment, the first moment when I stepped on a tennis court.
That's awesome.
That's when it's.
That's like the best
yeah.
thing I've ever heard.
The number one word, honestly, for every kid out there, every parent, every coach, you have to have passion for anything. Not
anything
tennis,
you do.
Anything.
Yeah.
If you have passion for it, you will be great at it. And it doesn't matter what if it's a sport
no.
or if it's a business. If you have a passion for something, you will endeavor to find a way to
and
be
in
good
this
at
lifestyle,
it.
Like through tennis, like I've met so many people who you learn a lot about people. You learn the different personalities and the people you kind of try to stay away from because you know there's always something they want, you know,
yeah.
for them. Like there's
good people.
There's really good people as well, and but to me, like when I hear people talk about passion, even if it's about a subject that I know absolutely nothing about, but they can, you feel their passion come through. That's when I'm already
yeah.
like I'm.
You lean
got
in.
Got me. You yep.
Yeah.
That's all I need. Like and.
We're getting tattoos.
All right.
Passion.
Let's go.
Let's
we
go.
Before we go, a fashion report from London in a British accent.
Greetings from London. Your most beloved fashion contributor, Andrea Petkovic, reports for duty. A heat wave has not only confused the British inhabitants, but has also caused all seats to tumble out of style, so to speak. Thus, it is not a cup of tea then, but the choice of a glass of ice-cold water or a glass of my favourite, Pimm's. Strawberries and cream and scone with jam will keep you company for this segment. White is in principle always on the schedule at Wimbledon, from a much discussed collaboration between Adidas and the skateboard company Palace to flowing Nike dresses with holes in the back, you can find it all. The royal box is as traditional as one would assume and as is proposed in the formal dress code. The men wear three-piece suits and tie, and the women flock their most beautiful cocktail dresses in pastel colors. Do you feel frisky? Wear a hat to a merely suggested blown-out hair. But don't be mistaken, just a few tube stations north from SW19, the most avant-garde streetwear will catch your eye. Architectural avant-garde a la Comme des Garçons, plateau sneakers and minimum makeup make the London look. Fear no gender, because boys look like girls and the girls look like boys. Though the occasional bird sighting is unavoidable, it seems that the tides have changed and what once was fair is now frowned upon. Grab a pint in your most beloved pub and beware, because rumour on the street has it that it is coming home. I'm Petco and this was Fashion. Football's coming home, is coming home, is coming. Football's coming home, is coming home, is coming.
And that's it for this episode of the Racket Magazine podcast. Thanks for listening. Our host is Renee Stubbs. Our co-host and producer is me, Caitlin Thompson. Music by internationally renowned DJ Stretch Armstrong. Thanks to Tim Ruggieri, Taylor Dalton, and the team at Acast. Find us at racketmag.com/podcast and subscribe to us at any of your favorite podcatchers.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.